Welcome to the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Rouse.
And I am Dan Mecca.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Jordan.
And we are back this week with the Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet.
Yeah, last week, you know, Season of Witch, no one saw it.
No one saw it. Actually, that's not true. It did do okay, but no one liked it, hopefully.
That's true. Yep. So we're back. We're going to talk a little Green Hornet. Michel Gondry does Blockbuster.
Long-awaited, long-delayed.
Yes.
Not a lot of good things said about it during the production phases. Right. A lot of problems.
Right.
Director left. Star left. Seth Rogen was in it. And it would have been a strange role. I mean, we like Seth Rogen here, but it was a strange casting decision. I mean, Risky but Strange, Michel Gondry doing a Blockbuster, like you said. So, yeah. How did it turn out? What do we think?
Well, do you want to talk a little Golden Globes first?
Before?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Before.
All right, let's
do
Golden Globes before.
You know, lead up to...
Let's lead up to the Hornet.
Yeah, right, I mean...
I like it. Okay.
Yeah. And, right. You know, Golden Globes fresh in our mind. Why not?
They literally ended 10 minutes ago?
So, I think first off...
Hit me with it.
The star of the show was Ricky Gervais.
I think that, you know, I'm a big fan of Ricky Gervais, and I'm a big fan of the way that he... does his comedy in the very crude and crass and brutally honest way that he does his comedy. And, I mean, the last 2 years, the Golden Globes has become more of a roast and less of an actual hosting platform. I mean, literally, every time he was introduced, these announcers, these, you know, these people that were, these presenters, rather, he'd have something mean to say. And it was always funny, but it was kind of clear that the room was just not, I guess, giving him the leeway that he got last year. He was much meaner this year, for sure. But I liked it. I ate it up. I loved it.
Yep.
What'd you think?
No, I liked it, yeah, I know. I mean, right off the bat with his jokes about the tourist, and that was what he
right,
opened
exactly,
with.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
It was like what everyone was thinking. I'm just so glad, he just said it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the jokes making fun of the Hollywood Foreign Press, and he wasn't the only one to do that. I mean, Robert De Niro did,
yeah.
A few other presenters did as well. Christian Bale did when he won his acceptance award. So it was kind of a brutally honest awards ceremony all around. I got a kick out of it,
yeah,
for sure. Any surprises?
We were going to go through the winners a little bit, talk about it. I mean, out of surprises, I mean, for me... The Kids Are Right, obviously expected out of that
totally.
Crappy group.
Right, I mean, the comedy musical, that was really the only real contender.
Expected, Colin Firth expected.
Right.
I mean, The Social Network, and a Benny.
Aaron Sorkin, a
Benny. I mean, I guess Melissa Leo for The Fighter.
Yeah, I mean, that was an open-ended category. I mean, I guess if that means... You know, the Golden Globes have always been kind of a strange award ceremony, even though they were right about Best Picture all those years in a row. You know, the Hollywood Foreign Press is a notoriously corrupt and kind of irredeemable and non-reliable kind of media outlet. So, I don't know, it's really more for entertainment value that people watch the show and that people go to the show because you can tell everyone's just getting really drunk. So, you know, for something like supporting actress, is it an indicator? Yes. But, I mean, could someone like Amy Adams or... Jackie Weaver still pull it out? I mean, I guess so. I think this kind of showed that Melissa Leo is probably the front runner now.
Yeah.
You know, people loved her in Frozen River, and this is a more accessible movie, so.
Yeah. It was just great. I think we both agree that Social Network will probably take the Oscar.
Right, and I mean, as well, it should.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is a movie that, you know, came out in October. King's Speech got hot in September. So, I mean, you have these two movies that really have been fighting against each other. You know, around the same time, that they both kind of were released onto the world. And you know, one just lost a little bit of steam. And then, you know, one kept on gaining steam. And
yep.
I think that kind of came to fruition tonight. So, you know, and I think Colin Firth, you know, he's getting his Oscar for two films. You know, he's getting his Oscar for this great performance. And he's getting his Oscar for last year's amazing performance in Single Man. So, you know, you can't say he's not deserving of it.
Right. Totally.
So,
yeah. Any favorite acceptance speeches, if you will?
I like Christian Bale's just because of, you know, like the brutal making fun of the Hollywood Foreign Press. I just thought that was kind of funny. And that was the first of the night, which made it even kind of better.
Yeah,
but
I liked Aaron Sorkin's little shout-out to Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Sorkin kind of – it was nice. It was almost like, you know, he kind of like – you know, he – he shouted out to Mark Zuckerberg, as did Scott Rudin when they won for Best Picture. But also Aaron Sorkin had a shout out to like all the girls in the room, which I think is kind of funny because he got kind of that flack about having no strong female characters in the movie. So I thought that was kind of an interesting little thing he did there. Other Sexton speeches, I loved personally Robert De Niro's little Cecil B. DeMille speech, just because like I don't even know what happened. Like, he started talking about Stanley and Iris and, like, Everybody's Fine and, like, movies that no one's seen of his. And he was like, I really wish those could have been in the clips. He was like, this guy is so old and so talented that he can just do, like, whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? He just goes up there and, you know, riles the room up. People don't know what whether to laugh, or he's, like, making fun of the press. He's, you know, he's talking about how, like, randomly just stops and goes, you know, Awakenings. He's like, it's one of my favorite movies. And then he just goes, Robin Williams gave a great performance. he goes, I forgot I was in it. And you think he's joking, but, like, I don't even know anymore. Yeah, and I love
it's
it.
Kind of a weird
you mean he made fun of Little Fockers, you know, yeah, a little. Yeah. He said, hey, you know, it's a job's a job.
I'm glad. You know, because I wasn't, you know, you don't really see him come out and talk about, like, the mistakes he... I mean, just the cash grabs he makes. You know, I mean, you saw Dustin Hoffman do it with
I'll say this. I'm loving these older actors these days. Because it's like, you know, you have your Al Pacinos. I mean, say what you will about Pacino. You know, and like, a lot of these people in the blogosphere kind of give Pacino a way too hard time when it comes to his movie choices. Because if you actually look at the way Pacino is, and he won tonight as well for Jack, well-deserved. Not a great HBO film. But anyway, like, you know, a guy like Pacino is primarily on Broadway now. He's doing Merchant of Venice, he does a lot of plays, as he's always done, you know, and he does this You Don't Know Jack, and he's putting in these great performances that people just don't see, maybe, in the film blogosphere world, because, like, they're not actual films. You know, and then you make Righteous Kill, and you make 88 Minutes, and all of a sudden you're kind of relegated to that, like, idea that you're this kind of actor, when really, you're really perfecting your craft in another medium. And then a guy like Robert De Niro or Dustin Hoffman or Richard Dreyfuss, these are guys who are just working actors who become almost more character actors, and they're just very honest about these projects, you know what I mean? Dustin Hoffman, the back end, that's why I did Little Fockers. Yeah. Richard Dreyfuss, I wanted to play a bad guy, that's why I did Red, you know? And let's just quickly, loved the Bruce Willis anger at the Ricky Gervais joke about him being Ashton Kutcher's dad. That was a marquee moment.
Yeah, actually, another moment I loved was
the Robert Downey Jr. moment.
Well, that was funny, but
that was a joke that I thought was funny, but like I saw some people were like whatever live blogging it or stuff, and then said that they actually thought that was a little tasteless, which I don't agree with, but yeah. I guess I can empathize with.
Well, we did get to see Emma Stone's nice little blonde hair. I wasn't sure how that was going to go. That was the first time in motion.
She looked beautiful. See, you know? She looked absolutely
But beautiful. No, one of my favorite parts, I think you liked it too, Sylvester Stallone.
Introducing the fighter. That was a nice little ditty, you know, a little introducing the fighter there.
Yeah, and then another thing we didn't even mention because it was kind of on the TV side, but it is a film, Carlos.
Carlos got some love.
I mean, over the Pacific, which, I mean, it wasn't that well received, but I would... You know, it's just a thing people would have seen, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think The Pacific was critically acclaimed, for sure, but viewer-wise, I think HBO had higher hopes. I don't know that it attracted the same attention that Band of Brothers did, as far as I know.
I mean,
but
I don't really hear anyone talking
about it. Right, well, yeah, exactly. And then, Carlos, I mean, is, you know, Carlos, just the fact that it's a 5.5-hour movie, that was the Sundance Channel miniseries, the fact that it got love like that is just so nice to see, because it was both on our top 10 list. Just a tremendous feat of filmmaking.
And
so,
a quick little, I mean, we don't talk about TV too much, but a quick little note, what did you think of The Boardwalk Empire, love?
Well, here's the deal. I watched most of Boardwalk Empire. I think I watched, how many episodes was it, 12?
12.
I think I watched like 7 or 8 episodes. I got really caught up in work and all that, and I just never, I had a buddy who I was watching with, and I stopped going over his house to watch it because of work, and so I never finished it. And the reason I never finished it was because it never grabbed me the way that The Sopranos grabbed me.
Yeah.
I don't know why. There was a lot of interesting things going on. I love Kelly MacDonald. But I don't know. There's something about the show. I feel like the hype has outlasted the actual what's on the screen.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I watched the whole thing, and I do agree. Like, it was almost, it was like a chore to watch. It's like, okay, I gotta watch the next Boardwalk Empire, but like, I did get a little bit out of it, which is good.
Well, see, I don't know.
It's not as great as like
a good indication for me of like how people react to that show is my father, right? Who doesn't really watch any TV. You know, he watches like Modern Family and the History Channel, like literally. So he was real excited about Boardwalk Empire, And he stuck with it episode after episode. He watched the whole thing. But, like, awesome. I remember the first four or five – you watched it with him, actually. Yeah. And the first four or five episodes, he would kind of be like, I don't know how I feel about it, you know, all this stuff. But then by the end, he really had ingrained himself in this world. And I don't know that I ever gave the show that fair shake. So I think it might be more on me. But just because I loved what was it going against? Oh, Mad Men.
Mad Men.
You know, Mad Men is I'll go to hell and back for that show. I love that show more than any other movie. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to see that get some love, and I wanted Jon Hamm to finally get some love, which he has yet to do. But you know, it's nice seeing Steve Buscemi get recognized. Also, nice seeing Paul Giamatti get recognized for Barney's version, which no one will ever see. But it's nice that he got it, and he looked drunk when he was up there, and that was nice partying. Amen. So good. So good for Paul.
Yeah, so
and Steve.
Yeah. Oscar noms come out pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, January 25th.
Yep. And then we'll see how this carries over.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that The Social Network, I mean, I really honestly think that
all the major categories here will transfer over. Like, I don't see...
Right, I totally agree.
Yeah. I don't see any real changes, which...
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm looking here. It's just going to be...
A Portman Firth kind of year.
I guess there is that Annette Bening, Natalie Portman.
Christian Bale's got it. And after tonight, like, just looking at the... I know we talked about it a little bit, but I really think Melissa Leo...
Really?
We'll get it. I mean, I don't know. Just think.
Yeah. Amy Adams just knocks out of the park.
You're right.
And, you know, who says Natalie Portman doesn't deserve it? I mean, you know, great actress.
Yes.
So.
All right. Well, let's move. Let's get back into the Green Hornet.
Let's get back. Let's get right back into it.
Like Dan said, was going to have a summer release. Pushed it back. Post-converted it to 3D.
Yeah, pushed it back to December and then to January to post-convert.
Right.
Yeah. So. Sony. Columbia Pictures.
After
the How Do You Know disaster and the Tourist disaster. Let's take a minute to say, the Tourist, not a disaster, if you look at the foreign grosses, but anyway, forget that.
Yeah.
Green Hornet, what did I think? I did not like it. I did not like it at all. I actually was not awake for all of it. I did snooze a bit, not too much, but enough. I watched enough to give up. We had a very long weekend. We spent the weekend editing, so... We came directly home, went directly out, saw the Green Hornet, and I watched about 35 minutes, and I said, you know what, this action set piece would be a good time to take a 15-minute nap because I'm not interested in anything that's going on. And then I woke up after that 15-minute nap, and then I spent the next 45 minutes thinking about taking another one. I didn't. I got through the movie, but it did not get more interesting.
Right. Yeah, well, for me, you know, I mean, this comes from the writers of Superbad and Pineapple Express.
Right. Two are clearly better, writing those kinds of movies.
Yes, and so with this one, you know, you could tell they kind of wanted... First of all, I mean, the Green Hornet, we talked about this earlier a little bit off the record, but, like, that doesn't feel like a franchise necessarily that deserves a $140 million production.
Yeah, and I think you get the vibe from everybody that no one thought it deserved that much. I mean, you have this... I mean, you just have this thing. I mean, it was a 1930s radio serial. It was, I believe, it was a 1960s television show.
50s or 60s.
Yeah. With Bruce Lee as Kato, which is like its one kind of nostalgia claim to fame. But really, I mean, not a comic book series. No one really behind. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really know anything about the Green Hornet except that it was long in development. All that.
Kevin Smith had a take on it.
Right, I mean, it was meant to be a 90s superhero movie, but after, like, The Shadow and The Phantom.
They did have, I guess they did, we talked about, they did have, like, comic book series, but I don't think it was anything big that picked it up. But, yeah.
I mean, so, I don't know, I just think that the whole movie feels generally unnecessary. And I know that I'm almost pulling directly from the Roger Ebert review, which definitely tore it apart, but... You know, Seth Rogen doesn't seem comfortable in the role. He co-wrote it with Evan Goldberg, and he stars as Brett Reed. And he just doesn't really seem like he ever gets comfortable in the role. Like, you know, is it a full-out comedy? Is it trying to be kick-ass, you know, being both a satire of the superhero genre, but and then also a superhero movie? Yes, but it's PG-13. You know, it's got that weird stoner humor, but he's never stoned, obviously, because it's a superhero movie. You have Jay Chou in it as Kato. He doesn't speak English well, and that's funny enough sometimes. But you know, some jokes don't work. Like, there's, like, a blowjob joke in it that feels like it belongs in Superbad or Pineapple Express, not this movie. So just a lot of things. Tom Wilkinson is completely underused and literally looks like he, like, I mean, you know, he looks as though he's not in the movie. I mean, he's in the movie just to die quickly and have the really weakly written opening scene.
And kind of oddly, he, with his scenes and some of the other scenes, they only use master shots, and it was kind of like pretty flat.
Yeah, directing. Well, yeah.
For as inventive as Gondry's,
right, and Michelle Gondry's the guy behind the camera, and
felt. I mean, first my impressions. I didn't dislike it as much as you. I just was, like you said, an unnecessary film. One that I mildly enjoyed. There were parts, you know, that were amusing, but the only really laugh out loud moment I got was in the beginning, which we'll talk about maybe in spoilers.
Yeah, totally.
And then throughout the rest of the movie, you know, it was just very run-of-the-mill. You know, there was a few of the Gondry elements I liked, and a few did not work at all. I'll say that.
Yeah, talk about
And then,
and I mean, at the end, I mean, but the end problem of all of it is that there were very few of any Gondry.
I don't think that's a problem. Like, I'm trying to think. What's another movie where indie director or something stepped into a big franchise and just added a little? There was one that came to mind, but I can't think of it. But like, it doesn't need to be like an Eternal Sunshine movie, I don't think. Like, he didn't have to go so far in some aspects and then so little in others. Like, there could have been a middle role that I don't think he really achieved. Or maybe he did try to achieve it, and that's why it felt so flat throughout.
Like, I mean,
I don't want to see a movie that's like, I don't want to see a big budget movie like this written by those, by Rogan and Goldberg, that was an all-out Gondry movie. Like, I don't.
Yeah,
don't,
no, I do agree. I do totally agree. And when I saw the trailer and I saw the Cato vision and all that stuff, I thought that it seemed that there was a decent amount of that Gondry-esque imagination, but it just never meshes with anything else.
A few times.
I think at the end of the day, it was an interesting idea. You know what I mean? You take this artsy director, music video director, and you take this kind of stand-up comedian, really, and you put them together in a movie with an Asian pop star. And you say, like, you know, let's, like, can we make this, like, old serial, you know, story into this movie? And I just don't think it ever really worked, you know what I mean? And the director was initially supposed to be Stephen Chow, which was, I mean, just as much a risk as Gondry. I mean, he's, you know, just as artistic in that respect. So, you know, there's that. So, I mean, there's so many cardboard lines in that movie. And I never could tell if it was, like, meant to be cardboard, like they were making fun, or, for example, the opening scene, Tom Wilkinson, like, is yelling at the young Britt Reed, and he takes his superhero doll and pops his head off, and it's funny, like, because you hear the, you know, and, like, he pops his head off, and, like, I laughed, and some people laughed, didn't laugh, and I didn't know if it was meant to be funny, and then the movie only blurred that confusing line more and more and more. And just the amount of destruction in this movie, just it ended up getting me thinking about just the production and how, like, why are they destroying these buildings and just, like, bleeding all this money out. And
moments of blurring, like, the lines, like, in Kick-Ass, like, we talked about how similar lines. But, like, in that, like, I think when we saw it, some people laughed and some people didn't. But, like, it's not really irreverent in terms of, like, you're questioning. It's more of just, like, you're wondering why. Like, there's a few lines in here.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about Kick-Ass. I mean, Kick-Ass is, you know, and I think we can all kind of agree in this point, it's very much one way for, you know, an hour maybe, or like 45 minutes. It's very much one way. It's very much irreverent. It's very much, you know, this is us, you know, saying fuck you to the superhero genre. And then there's a clear point, you know, where the movie literally kind of does a little whoop. Yeah. And becomes what it, you know, supposedly was making fun of. And so, I mean, at least there is that almost schizophrenic distinction in that movie, which is a huge flaw, which is one of the reasons I didn't really appreciate that movie. But, like, there's a boldness to that, like, almost has to be somewhat appreciated. You know what I mean? Somewhat, I don't know, like, it's there. You know, it's there, it's in your face, it says this is what's going on, this is the choice you made. Green Hornet doesn't make any choices. You know, it's just a bunch of rambling. I mean, Seth Rogen, just one-liner after one-liner, where it's like, you know, that obvious humor that's funny when you're high and James Franco's your co-star just does not resonate in the same way when you know, you do property damage, and then he says, oh, that was very dangerous, and you're just like, well, Yeah, you know, and then it just, and you know, and you have this Asian dude who doesn't speak English and really doesn't have the really great comedic timing as your sidekick. He can't really accelerate that joke, and so all of a sudden you're kind of just talking to yourself, and that's kind of what I ended up feeling like. I mean, Cameron Diaz, I don't know why people say she's ruining the movie. I mean, she's not in it as far as I can tell in any real way, which is kind of a shame because I think she kind of successfully showed us some comedic chops in Night and Day. Yeah. So that, I feel like she was pretty much wasted. And then, I mean, Christoph Waltz, like, what is he even doing in it? Like, just, you know, Water for Elephants, you know?
Yep.
You know, hopefully you're good in that one.
Yeah. Could be a one-hit wonder.
Because this is just, I mean, I don't even know if it's his fault. I mean, that character, Chudnovsky or whatever, is the strangest superhero villain I've ever seen, and not in a good way. Like, yeah. I guess I get what they were trying to do. Yeah. Like, he's got an identity problem or something.
But then they paint, like, you know, like the beginning, he'll be the first, you know, I think, one of the opening scenes is him talking about how he's kind of past his prime and he's not menacing at all. But then they paint him to be menacing towards the end of the film, and then it doesn't work.
Then it's like, he says he's not menacing, and then he is, and you think, oh, so this is a guy who's, like, he's got all bases covered.
Yeah.
And then it's apparent that he does have an identity crisis, and so you're confused. Which would have been fine, I mean, if that was the case, but he never gets enough time to develop any of that or any good lines that would develop any of that. And, like, clearly, I mean, he was brought onto the project way late, and that's what it feels like. Like, it feels like he was brought on the project
late. They said they were almost shooting. Like, it was, they were almost shooting when he was brought on.
Right, well, exactly. Close, I mean, Nicolas Cage got fired, and then it was like, yeah, I mean, I remember writing that story, reporting on that story. And, I mean, that is honestly what it feels like. And this is one of those movies, too, where, you know, in this day and age of constant reporting and constant updates on sets, like big sets and stuff like this, you have to wonder, you know, it's coming out in January, it has a lot of bad buzz, you know, are we going into this movie thinking, like, oh, this is going to be a disappointment, and then are we making it up? But I was excited to see it. And so, like, I don't really know that I can say that because I was not excited to see it, and then I thought the marketing campaign was very good.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very good marketing campaign, as per the box office, which is done pretty well. Yeah. Despite all of its problems, and it was disappointing through and through. So it's a shame.
Let's get into a little spoiler.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple great scenes. Yeah.
So I would say, before we get into spoilers, I mean, I still think, even with all of its flaws, massive flaws, there's some, like, you wouldn't have a horrible time seeing this, like some other blockbusters we got this year.
I would say, I don't know if you would have a horrible time. I mean, I definitely laughed more than a couple times, but, I mean, even though I disliked Be Kind Rewind, which was Michel Gondry's, you know, one of his, was it his last movie, I think?
Yes, it was, 2008.
Even though that was also, a very big disappointment in my eyes, I would rather recommend Be Kind Rewind, just for what it experiments with and how it's just a in general bolder movie. I would say, if you're gonna watch two of the Gondry disappointments that have come out in the last few years, watch that one first.
My level of disappointment was much greater in Be Kind Rewind.
Fair.
But I guess that wouldn't matter for the viewer that doesn't know either going in. So I guess I would recommend Be Kind Rewind.
Yeah, I mean,
just watch Eternal Sunshine.
Or just watch Eternal Sunshine again. Just watch it again. Or any of his music videos.
Yeah. Speaking of, let's get into spoilers. So, let's talk about some of the Gondry elements. So, like, first, he does this cool thing. The first real flourish we see is the scene where he is partying.
Right.
And he goes into a garage with a girl.
Yeah, and you have that nice
long shot where it's actually, I mean, I don't even know how they would do that because the camera's moving in a circle, you know, normal speed, and then everything else is happening extremely fast, so maybe I don't know. Leave it up to Gondry to decide.
Yeah, I mean, it was impressive, but, like, conceptually boring.
Yeah, and exactly. And, like, because, like, I did think right before that the scenes, like, where he was kind of partying, it kind of, some life to it. This, it just kind of, like, you didn't need to have that shot go on for 2 minutes. That's for a music video. You know what I mean? A lot of the movie felt like that.
And, like, yeah, and that's the thing. And, like, what, and so this is, he's with a girl. Yeah. And he takes the girl to his father's, like, garage.
It also got all these, his cars.
All these great cars, garage, you know, and everything. And so they're, like, kissing on all the cars.
Yeah, that, which is kind of a waste of time. Like,
but it's just like, you know, but it's just weird. Like, why would you just make out like on a Ferrari and then make out on a Maserati? Like why would you not do more than making out in all those cars? So I mean, that was kind of just strange because I spent the entire time thinking like
the PG-13. Yeah, but comes I know what you mean.
Then just don't do that. You know, I mean that. And see, this is the thing. Like, you know, a guy as creative as Gondry, who can think of, up of a shot like that and then successfully, technically execute a shot like that. Conceptually, like, is that that's what we're gonna get? You know what I mean? That's what has me wondering. And it was like that with the other things, you know, like
the places that did work, I thought, were the fight scenes.
Yeah,
for the most part,
I agree.
The Kato vision was good to a point, but I did like I really liked just kind of the way he handled like he did actually use kind of that same thing where one person in the fight was going faster than the other people. Like he would
kick, the 300 stuff going on. Yeah.
But it was like more advanced than that in some way. Like he was doing something else.
I definitely enjoyed, you know, and Jay Chou was one of my favorite parts of this movie. Yeah. I thought he did a lot with a little.
And then some other flourishes that he, like the scene from the trailer where they hit the beer bottles off. Didn't that kind of like end at a weird beat? Like he did it, and then it was like, that was cool, and then they just fell to the ground. And
yeah,
were,
well,
like,
totally. It was
and
so strange.
Felt like
he hit him, and it just, they were
like,
are
we going to do something?
And then they just fell to the ground.
Yeah,
and
then
you just
kind of,
you're like,
it.
Wow, that was weird. And so that was a strange little thing.
And then I guess since we're in spoilers, we can talk about the part before that. I don't know if you're awake for this. split screens, like 12 of them.
I don't know. 16. No.
Okay, so this is cool. There's a scene where they say spread the word of the Green, like tell them we're gonna kill the Green Hornet, and they eventually kill like 7 imposters of the Green Hornet. But what happens is you start with Chudnovsky, whatever, telling one of his boss or underlings, whatever,
minions,
minions, and the frame splits into two, and you see them. The underling goes to tell someone. And then they tell them, splits again,
right.
Like 16 times. But the feed of this is, like, every time it splits, it's a single, if you look at the frame, it's a single shot. So, like, it'll split, but it won't cut in that single shot. It is, like, 16 times.
That sounds cool.
It was cool. I don't know, like, yeah.
Gondry.
It's Gondry.
That's Gondry.
So, but that, but then the part that, you know, we both saw.
The weird animation at the end.
Yeah, so, like, I guess they want to reveal, tell them what the whole plan was.
Right, like, I mean,
of,
this evil DA is the bad guy. I mean, horrible bad guy also, let's just say.
Yeah.
You know, whoever that actor is, that I can't remember his name. Just a poor performance by him. They pretty much have this moment where Britt Reed, who is this apparently the dumbest person in the world, realizes the blueprint of this entire evil DA's, plan to take over the world or what have you. And it's in this weird Gondry, like, stop motion slash Photoshop slash animation. You know, a lot of different things are going on. And a lot of weird things happen. But, I mean, the problem is it literally explains to you the plot of this bad guy in this really, like, rudimentary way.
That you already don't care about.
That you already don't care. I mean, at this point, you don't care about the movie that much or what's happening. So it doesn't work, but I guess as its own thing, as a visual gem or whatever, you know, visual little exercise, it's interesting enough. I don't know.
I don't think it was that interesting.
I mean, I was kind of left. I was left underwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of it, really. That's kind of it.
Yes. And then a few of his match cuts I liked, or I guess they were just like, there's a shot where they're getting their costumes ready and they're spray painting the their helmet or their visors or whatever.
And
then it switched to them, like, with them on, you know.
Yeah. No, I like
the,
that. Yeah.
The dissolve.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
And, like, a few other things like that. But yeah. I have to agree that, you know, it fell flat. Do you want to get, like, some nitpicks?
I guess since we're in spoilers,
okay.
One of the funny scenes of the movie is there's a James Franco character, got cameo in the beginning of the movie. It's one of the first scenes. And James Franco is hysterical. I mean, it's a great scene, really funny, and between him and Christoph Waltz. And it kind of, like, promises more than the movie can give, which is kind of a shame, but it is a nice little, you know, another nice little James Franco ditty from the man. So,
yes.
So good for him.
Yes, and, you know, the final action scene, something we didn't actually talk about before, personally, but So the, obviously, if you're listening, you've seen it, or you don't care about Green Hornet. They are at a sushi, is it, or like a
sushi place, bar, yeah.
And he records, or thinks he does. I didn't quite get the end of
he
that.
He like records the evil DA's admitting everything, and it's on this like sushi flash drive, which is weird.
Yeah. Anyways, and so like their plan is to
get back to the Sentinel.
But forgive me if I'm wrong. Did they not receive a fax earlier? Couldn't they have uploaded online there? Or
well, I mean, phone? And see, this is like, and there's a lot of stuff like that in the movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, and like this is, you know, say what you will, it's a superhero movie, blah blah blah, this, that, and the third. Okay, you can say all that stuff. You know, like people say stuff like this about The Dark Knight and about plot holes in The Dark Knight. I wrote an article about plot holes in The Dark Knight, but the beauty of a well-written screenplay, even if you cheat like that, is that you deceive the viewer, you know, and I don't mean deceive in a bad way, but you deceive the viewer in a good way because of the other elements.
Yeah.
And also, that's the director's job, but this denotes such deception. I mean, because you have, he has this jump drive, he's recorded something, and you have this car that literally can do everything. So it just kind of, you're working in this world, you have to find something better than just a jump drive, where he's like, oh, I'm going to go. There's no computer in this world that we live in except for the one at the newspaper that's 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
And so instead of just going to a local internet shop where, like, I could just plug in and, like, log on. Or, like, find a dude with a fucking iPhone. You know what I mean? Like, and I could do it too. You know what I mean? So, like,
and
stuff
it's
like
an MP3
that.
File.
Just,
it's not like it's
right.
Anything.
Exactly. That's the best part. It's like a recorded MP3
it's like
file. It's like a 1 minute MP3 file. Like, how many megabytes is that? Like, you could Gmail that to somebody. Like, you could have done it while the guy was still talking, pretty much.
And I mean,
so
what's
stuff like
that. Is like as technically proficient as Gondry is, it's stuff like that. Like, how did he not?
Right. Well, that's my point.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean? And that's what I mean. Like Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg. Yes, they can write an amazing, you know, screenplay about, you know, a heartfelt screenplay about two kids who are growing up, or you know, a you know, what was the other one they wrote?
The Stoner comedy.
Right. Or Pineapple Express.
A hilarious
Stoner comedy about two man children growing up or not growing up at all, you know, like, but when it comes
that's actually an example of an indie director that went on that I was
David
Gordon
Green
about,
perfect
yeah.
example that's a perfect example
and
yeah.
he did it right
and he did way right
actually Greg Mottola too kind of doing it in Superbad
too Greg Mottola because he Day Trippers and you know a few other movies
so this is
the third time very good point. Mr. Rao.
But yes, and then another. Did you finish?
No, yeah, good. Keep going. I don't know.
And then a nitpick, the email thing. Now,
Cato is sitting.
I don't know if they didn't do any time lapse. Obviously, it was the second he sends an email to Christoph Waltz,
right.
He gets it back the very second he hits send.
Literally.
So I don't know if they had. There was another way to cover that up, but. Just kind of a mistake that's just distracting, which is kind of annoying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and also, like, the blatantly written-ness of the emails, where it's like, what do you want me to do? I want you to kill Green Hornet. Like, we live in an age where anybody can read emails. Like, that's how politicians get caught. So, like, why, you know, it's just stuff like that. And, like, and this is, like, I say this a million times. When you make a movie that's poorly written and poorly directed in that way, those problems get noticed. You know, you can have those problems, but they just can't be noticed. And when you're watching something that's not entertaining, you entertain your time by noticing the problems, because that's all you can do.
And the superhero thing that comes up a lot is, how do they not recognize the person in the mask?
Right.
And
well,
this,
right.
It was almost shocking. That,
right.
Like,
I mean, that's...
Like, the whole last thing, I was like, so they already know, like, the whole third act where, like, he is face to face with all of the people that he interacted with before, and then there's like a long scene where Cameron Diaz is surprised, and you're like, all right, just get over with it. So that was kind of annoying.
Yeah, and it's such a shame, you know. Like, you know, I'm not Cameron Diaz's biggest defender by any means, but like, you know, they're just arguably one of the most poorly written female characters like I've ever because like you. No actress could ever. I mean, like, this is like, you know, Maggie Gyllenhaal in Batman Begins, in The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Like Katie Holmes in Batman Begins. Like, Katie Holmes in Batman Begins had kind of a place, like, she was the hometown girl, she had kind, you know, she had those lines that kind of said, you know, it's what you do that defines you, blah, blah, blah. There were moments, right, and that's why her character seemed more full. And then, like, in Dark Knight, like, the by far the weakest part of the movie was Maggie Gyllenhaal, who, like, was clearly overcompensating for just more, the most thinly written character. And here you have Cameron Diaz doing exactly the same thing. Yeah. You know, you have this horribly written character who's, like, and also, let me just quickly say this. newspapers, like newspapers controlling the world, like, it's a nostalgic thought, and I appreciate it, almost as nostalgic as Pecan Rewind and how film and VHS can, like, you know, save the world, but, I mean, let it go, Michelle Gondry, like, let it go, like, steps forward, my friend, like, steps forward, like, newspapers are dying, we all know this, it's a very sad thing, I've been working for newspapers since I was 15 years old. I mourn the loss. I truly do. I'm watching The Wire season 5 right now. It makes me very sad. But
speaking,
like,
of The Wire,
but speaking of The Wire, right? Yeah, there's a guy on The Wire in this movie. And so you know, what, like, how would a newspaper, like, I don't know, like, just be that effective in this world? I'm just saying. And so that's just another thing. That's for another day. But a lot of things like that, just a strange mixed bag of ultimate failure. But what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I would have to. Oh, another thing I want to talk about is Seth Rogen's character. He is a dick.
Right, which I actually kind of appreciate.
I did appreciate it, but it felt like they were, like, with the Zimmer Report, they went all the way. And true. They developed that character, that's despite what you say.
No, true. No. I mean, they like, did go all the way.
Yeah.
In Observer Report.
And that's what I was hoping for, can't kind of here. But, like, he always is kind of like a dick, and, like, and just back and forth, like, I don't know. Like, it wasn't,
I mean, this
enough.
Movie does. I mean, I'm not trying to get, trying to, you know, I'm not trying to take the blame off Rogen or Gondry or whatever. But this movie screams studio interference. Like, yeah. This movie screams. We tried to make an artistic superhero movie,
yeah.
And
yeah, like,
Sony Columbia was like, "Well, guys, I mean, you know that we spent $140 million on this," and they're like, "Yeah, I know." So,
like, I love those awkward moments. Like, there's a scene where he, like, goes to kiss Cameron Diaz.
And she, like, hits him. That was good. That was fun.
Yeah, and, like, that kind of stuff. And it just felt like, you know, they half did that, and then the other half, it was like, okay, we gotta kind
of
make him, like.
But, like, and also, truthfully, I don't think Seth Rogen has the acting capabilities of handling that kind of thing, because you have, like, for example, like, you know, and I hate to keep coming back to The Dark Knight, but, like, in The Dark Knight, Bruce Wayne's very smug, like, more smug than he is in any of the other Batman movies. Like, in Batman Begins and in Dark Knight, he's much more smug and pompous than he is in any of the other ones.
Yeah.
And he makes it work because Christian Bale has those two faces and it really looks good. But in this movie, like, it's just like a weird, like, there's a scene where in the beginning, where Britt Reed gets mad because, like, his coffee tastes different. And even though it is kind of funny because he's, like, worrying about the coffee, it's, like, almost off-putting, because you're like, bro, like, your dad just died. Like, I get, like, it's a very strange, and I think that a more capable actor in that kind of a role would have done a better job with that. I mean, you know, and, you know, I think, you know, put Seth Rogen in Funny People, and he'll kill. You know, you put Seth Rogen in The Green Hornet, and you don't know what you're going to get. I think that's what happened, so.
And can we talk about the sadness that is Edward James Olmos' character?
Yeah,
like,
in it?
He was like, he got introduced by just saying, "Hey, I was really close to your dad, so."
Yeah, and, like, he has four lines like that. He's like, "I don't think you understood me before, but, like, your dad listened to me a lot, so you should." And Seth Rogen's like, no. And then at the end, Seth Rogen's like, "This guy's gonna run the paper because my dad listened to him a lot." And then I just wanted Edward James Olmos to be like, "Motherfucker, I've been telling you that for 2 hours."
But a lot of this movie is very repetitive. Like,
we talked about that. But yeah, just a lot of scenes that feel like the same scene. Where, I mean, you know what? Truthfully, half of the movie, or whatever, half of what I saw of the movie was Seth Rogen reacting to stuff that Kato did. And, I mean, and that's, you know, it goes as far as it can.
Yep.
Like, I can't believe you just did that, Kato. You're like a Swiss Army knife, Kato. Kato, that was Kato. They also say Kato way too much.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we've established his name's Kato.
Yeah.
You have a repertoire. There's no reason to keep saying it. Yeah. They say, let's roll Kato 1,000 times. I guess that was the tagline of the 30s serial. I guess back in the 30s, people were stupider. I don't need to hear that 1,000 times.
A joke I did love that we didn't talk about is putting Seth Rogen in a coma for what he thinks is 4 days. Or for things it's like a few hours, and then it turns into 4 days, and then it turns into 11. So that was nice.
That was funny. That was funny with the gun.
Yeah, with the gun. Because in the trailer, you're like, where is that going to lead to? And it does lead somewhere in the movie, which is really nice.
Yeah. There are moments for
sure.
Yes,
there are. So, yeah, the Green Hornet. Rent Eternal Sunshine. Buy Eternal Sunshine, even though it'll make
and
really
watch
sad.
Signs of Sleep on Watch Instantly.
Yes, yes. And let's hope Michel Gondry's next film is the rumored collaboration with Charlie Kaufman.
That would be great.
Because that's where he does his best work.
Apparently.
Or go back to music videos.
Apparently that's where he does his best work.
It is a real shame. You know, this movie could have been freaking awesome.
Could have been.
But it's not.
How do you know? How do you know it could have been freaking awesome?
How do I know?
How do you know?
I'm talking about
the film. How do you know?
Okay, God, let's not.
But, I mean, that was Sony.
Yeah.
The Tourist could have been really awesome. Damn. Sony?
There's a lot of...
What are you going to do?
A lot of talent wasted, I would say. All right, yeah. So I think that can wrap us up. Our last episode was freaking long as hell, so we can.
We're gonna cheat a little bit tonight.
What comes out next week? Oh, we're gonna be at Sundance.
We're gonna be at Sundance.
So you will not get a podcast up from us for about 2 weeks.
Well, you never know. We're gonna be with Rafi Azadorian.
That's true. But we're definitely doing.
He's a very talented individual. Yeah, so we might be able to get some stuff too. But either way.
Yeah.
Expect another long episode if we don't in about 2 weeks.
What we will actually be doing is a lot of videos. Reviews.
Right.
But video reviews
watch
too.
Out for that, right.
Like, yeah, so watch out for that. It won't show up in the podcast feed if you're there, but it'll show up on our site, thefilmstage.com.
Jordan, where can they find you?
Twitter.com/thefilmstage.
And where can they find me?
That's a question. You can answer that yourself. I don't think I've
got Twitter.com/DJMECCA, Mecca Like the Holy City from Saudi Arabia.
Yes, that's your name, right?
Yeah, my name was the Holy Land High School.
Yes.
Yeah,
all
that's
right.
Right.
All right, thank you for listening to the Film Stage Podcast. We'll see you soon.
Good night.